It's time for Getting Down to Business with Mark Mondo. This new show discusses trends, technology, and tactics to help the listener learn more about improving sales, saving money, and fulfilling a personal mission through entrepreneurship. Today, we'll interview Michelle McCory. She's going to talk about a new business model to help people in small businesses save money on healthcare.
Welcome to Getting Down to Business with Mark Mondo on WVLP 103.1 FM. I'm your host, Mark Mondo. We're on the air in Valparaiso, Indiana, and you can listen to us streaming on the website at WVLP.org or use the TuneIn app on your mobile device and look for WVLP. 103.1 FM WVLP is a local nonprofit radio station based in Valparaiso, Indiana. This show, like many others on WVLP, are made possible by the generosity of donors and underwriters. We accept donations at WVLP.org. Simply click on the support tab and make a one-time donation or sustained pledge to WVLP. All donations are tax deductible. Underwriters are made up of businesses and organizations that support the shows on WVLP. Getting Down to Business with Mark Mondo would like to thank Homes by Hortensia, a Coldwell Banker affiliate in Porter County, Indiana, for their support. Homes by Hortensia has served the region's residential real estate needs in Indiana for over 12 years. Contact Hortensia Moreno at 219-249-5118 or visit homesbyhortensia.com. Homes by Hortensia, habla español. Welcome to the show. In case you're a new listener, here's my backstory, and I'm sticking to it. I've been a consultant for small businesses for the last 25 years, helping small businesses implement customer relationship management software, aka a CRM system, where I learn their business processes and customize the software to help them gain an advantage in sales, marketing, or customer service. But there's much more to becoming a success in business than just having a good CRM. That's why I bring on guests to tell their stories and share tips on either technology, tactics, or trends they use to become successful. So let's get into it and introduce everyone here today. To my side is the producer. She's the star soprano, and she's my wife as well. It's Mrs. Cynthia Zimmerman.
Hello, hello.
And to my other side, let's introduce our guest. It's Michelle McCory. She has over two decades in the healthcare industry, and she's a CMR, which I just learned 5 minutes ago is a certified medical representative. She also holds degrees in business administration, psychology, and a master's in counseling. And currently, she's an entrepreneur and runs a consultancy with businesses to help people in small business advocacy and local networking. Michelle, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
All right. So we're jumping into it. I get an opening rant. Good luck, everybody. Buckle in. So here's what's going on. We're going to talk about health insurance. And for me, managing health insurance is quite the hot button for me. It's expensive, and we don't get back what we paid for in premiums. It's an adversarial, to me, it's an adversarial relationship at best and complete thievery or larceny at worst. So I'm going to lay out some facts here about the healthcare in the U.S. And if it fires me up a bit, too bad, you're going to hear it. First of all, the American system is the only private one in the world. And in a country of 340 million, 27 million are uninsured. And that's about 9% of our country's population. That is in Wikipedia, and then Wikipedia goes to their sources. So the counter argument is, well, it's America, and America with the conventional wisdom is private is better than public, since the free market is better than a centralized economy, right? So shouldn't we be number one? Usually, yes, but according to the World Health Organization, the United States ranks 24th in care, which is below Morocco and just all of the EU. Or if we follow the Legatum Prosperity Index, The United States ranks 68th. Cynthia, number one is Singapore. Tell us more.
Well, the information I can give you on Singapore is that it is a wonderful small country that has achieved a lot for its size. It's a very well-educated workforce. They have great social services from cradle to grave. So not only childcare and education, university education, but also healthcare and senior citizen services. They provide housing for low-income individuals, and they're pretty outstanding low-income housing. Very little crime. Now, a lot of people might remember Singapore as being very strict and that you get a ticket for chewing gum or smoking in public. But when I was there visiting my parents who worked there for quite a few years, I never found it to be oppressive. I found it to be a friendly, safe, clean, lovely country. And people were very proud of being Singaporean. And they're very well known in the international business and hospitality sectors, amongst other things. And it's just a beautiful place to visit.
So if Singapore can do it, they're like, you know, a hundredth of the size of the United States. Why can't we do it? And people might counter that in the America system and say, well, it's too high cost of living and your taxes are too high. Fine, I will play that argument. And then I went to something called the Peterson Center for Healthcare Foundation. It's a nonpartisan think tank. And they did the research on correlating life expectancy to healthcare spending per capita. United States comes up at the lowest of the major industrialized countries as of 2021. That was the latest I could get. So maybe COVID might have a slight skew, but the whole world had COVID. For the United States, life expectancy was 76.1 years. Healthcare spending per capita, $12,914. The average life expectancy in the, let's call it the G7, G25, was 82.4 years, and healthcare spending was $6,000 a year. And number one in that category, Japan, 84 and a half years life expectancy, health spending per capita, $4,600. Nothing but stats here, people. There's a problem.
But it's good information to know. And for people that from the states that might consider Singapore, for example, being a very controlling centralized government, overseeing everything, there are pros and cons to that, but they've had more successes than failures with that system.
Well, I think Cynthia, do we have a road trip in mind for this?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, that's another show. We talk about that coming back. So it's expensive. We're not living as long. And I also did some more homework. Well, it's private. It's great. It must be better. No, it isn't. Bankruptcy, according to the American Journal of Public Health, the last study I could get was 2016. Medical bills contributed to 66.5% of bankruptcies. Was it the sole cause? But boy, if it's there two-thirds of the time, I think there's correlation and probably some causation. So at the end of the day, we spend all this money in the private sector because we think it's better than the rest of the world. Who's getting this money? Oh, I found out. Here are the profits reported by the major U.S. health insurance companies for fiscal year 2023. United Healthcare achieved a profit of $22.4 billion. To quote the Michael Myers line, $1 billion. No, $22 billion. Okay, that's not an M, that's a B. CVS got $8.3 billion. Profit, not revenue, profit. Elevance Health, I'm not familiar with them, but hey, they got $6 billion. Cigna, $5 billion. Satente or Satene, I don't know how to pronounce that, $2.7 billion. And Humana got $2.5 billion. So someone's getting the money. That ain't us. Well, I think there's something to conclude here that something's broken. I want to talk some anecdotal stories here. For me, I got in the ACA. It did help me in 2011 because I was in some real dark times fiscally. It did help supplement to get to a manageable area. So what the ACA does is, let's say premium's normally $500 a month. The ACA will supplement 300 of that 200. So you're like, oh, that's cool. And then people might say, well, that's socialism. Well, you know, someone's getting supplemented somewhere because insurance is a risk pool and all that. But what will happen is if I got a $300 supplement, then that is taxable income. It's like a tax credit. So you pay a little bit one way or the other. So the other quick anecdotal, but it was kind of a decent story, was, well, maybe not. I had knee surgery last year, and the surgical center said, you know what, you got to give us $5,000. Like, but I got insurance. No, you got to give us $5,000 anyway. Well, then I put out in a payment plan, shelled it out. Luckily, the surgical center said United Healthcare did pay for that part of the procedure, and I got some money back. Like, I'll call it a rebate, I guess. Maybe it was like a rebate. So those are my horror stories, or good, better stories. I'm sure, Cynthia, you got a story to share?
Well, when you did marry me, I did put you on my healthcare plan. So
well.
In essence, your monthly expenses went down by half.
Yeah.
And granted, you know, we have a slightly higher premium than others based on the plan. So you did have to shell out a couple of thousand for that knee surgery, but it would have been quite more if you didn't have my healthcare plan.
Agreed.
But it's still not perfect. I mean, you have ACA, it's not perfect. You know, you work for a company and you get a healthcare plan. It's not perfect, but it helps definitely cut down the costs so that if you don't have bankruptcy looming over you.
So look at this. I mean, Cynthia and I think we do okay. We do okay. I mean, mm-hmm. We're middle class and maybe, you know, a little on the better echelon. I mean, we're definitely not high rollers, but we're in pretty good shape. We got decent health insurance. Cynthia, the nonprofit she works with, has a good plan. I mean, I'm trying to tee this up for our guest. She's waiting in the wings, and I know she's got something to say about this. So I met Michelle in the local Lake County, Illinois networking circuit about a year ago. And, you know, she was working on a local, I'll call local economic engine, advertising agency and marketing agency. But Michelle, you've been busy working on turning the healthcare industry upside down. It's something called health sharing. I have no idea what it is. I bet you 99.9% of us don't. Tell us some more.
Yeah. So Mark and Cynthia, thank you for sharing your story. And I'll explain what that is in a moment. As everyone here listening can recognize, that there certainly are some areas of opportunity, to say the least, in the current healthcare space within this country. So let me tell you what health sharing is. As of 6 months ago, again, I, even coming from the commercial healthcare side with very large companies for over 20 years, I didn't know what it was 6 months ago. So health sharing essentially is, it began in churches about 25 years or so ago. And it was this pass the hat kind of mentality where members of a church contributed into, I guess we could call a sick fund or an injury fund. So if someone from the Johnson family who was a member of the church, say little Jimmy Johnson got sick or fell off his bike, the Johnson family would pull out of the hat and the church would contribute to Johnny's medical bills. So that's really to simplify that. Fast forward, it spread into other religious-based organizations in the Amish and Mennonite communities and really gained wings in the 80s into the modern health-sharing system that's been put in place today. So this is not a new concept. It's being done in a different way. So Mark, you talked about the Affordable Care Act. About March 2010, ACA came out with, there was a mandate. If you didn't have insurance, you were penalized and had to pay a fine. Members of health sharing organizations were not required to pay that mandate because health sharing was a coverage for these people that didn't opt into the commercial healthcare plans. So at that point in 2010, Healthcare sharing has grown tremendously, and in fact, in the last decade, has grown 1,000%. Now, when I talk to people about this, if they know about it, and I would say more than 90% of people, like myself, didn't know about it, they'll say, "Oh, that's that church health thing," and that's about the extent of the knowledge base that I'm finding out there, even in people in the insurance industry. So, what it is? It's an alternative to commercial healthcare. It is a nonprofit. So you just highlighted all of the profitability out there with the large commercial healthcare organizations. This is a nonprofit organization, so there are no motives. We don't have conflict between members, providers, shareholders, executive teams, middlemen, pharmacy benefit managers. It's just simply doesn't exist with healthcare sharing. So healthcare sharing is an opportunity to stop overpaying for current healthcare coverages. In fact, a staggering statistic is 5% of the population here account for half of the healthcare insurance costs in this country. And 80% of adults here in this country rank healthcare costs as one of their top concerns, if not their top concern.
I agree with that. I mean, Cynthia and I have been, when she says now that we're married, my insurance premiums went down a bit, but what if I get sick? I mean, I know the ACA, I think they were able to kind of calm down some of that prerequisites or pre-screening, you were sick 20 years ago, so we're going to jack up your premiums 5,000% because you had a cold. Mm-hmm. Now, right. I know the ACA had some kind of moderation against that, but can you talk to more about how the traditional insurance can still put the screws on?
Sure. So, and back to the ACA, that mandate has been lifted. So you're no longer, again, penalized. So that's been lifted, but that's what gave health sharing wings. So there are pitfalls. I'll just give you an example. I have a testimonial of a client who, through the ACA, purchased a supplemental plan. They were in their 70s, and the husband ended up having a heart attack, open heart surgery, stents, grafts, etc., and had extensive, $250,000+ bills. They thought that they were covered and protected, and then they got hit, and their portion of responsibility was nearly $10,000. And they questioned, why did I have insurance? What was I paying for, essentially, if I still have $10,000 that at 72 years of age, I have to come up with? And it makes no sense. With something like health sharing, there's caps and there's limits on how much you'll end up paying. And for that population in particular, it's, they were able to cover people at under $100 a month, at about $75 a month, with very, very low caps that are a tenth of a percent of what we're seeing out there with commercial insurance. So people are getting hit less hard with health sharing.
So one of the questions that, we're going to have probably a few more here over the hour, but what has been your journey on educating people on this? Like, is it so radical? Are we so, and I'm included in this pool, by the way, I'm probably institutionalized that private healthcare or, beating up private insurance vendors is the only way to go. What has been your journey on a approach of educating the masses? What has been your, tell us more about that. Like, how have you been able to do this from a professional, you're starting your own business on this. How have you been trying to help people out with this and educating them?
My call to masses, is educational, much like I'm doing here with you today. Mm-hmm. It's the main barrier to this is knowledge of health sharing and what it is. So that's been the biggest hurdle, but I'm extremely passionate about educating people about it and seeing eyebrows raise and eyes light up when I'm able to tell them what I'm able to do for individuals, small businesses, migrants here that are on an I-10, people that are paying too much or simply can't access it. The barrier is lack of knowledge about it or a misconception that, oh, it's that church thing. Although the health sharing did start faith-based, people still think, oh, I have to go to church every week and I have to have certain lifestyle parameters that I need to maintain. And especially with the corporation that I'm partnered with, it's open to all races, religions, creeds, colors, et cetera. So it's a non-exclusionary model. So breaking the misconception of how healthcare or health sharing rather started has been another hurdle. And as I hate to say a no-brainer, but when people learn about it, they're very readily wanting to learn more. And the majority of them are finding it, and we can talk about this later in terms of what I'm able to save, but industry-wide, the company that I work with, we're able to cut costs. What I'm seeing personally is in half. The statistics within our data show 30 to 70% off, which is it's significant, you know, particularly for the small business owner that can't afford to insure their employees and or just employees just don't have individual insurance or are not eligible for any other insurance. So there's a huge opportunity there.
Yeah, because this comes to mind off the top of my head here. So the workforce, especially in retail service or food industry, I suppose, or hospitality, mm-hmm. they don't pay anybody benefits.
No.
Or they got it, or let's say you got to get 35 hours a week and then the benefits package still stinks. So they'll make sure that they work 34 and three quarters hours to not trip that wire.
Yeah, I do have a lot of restaurant clients and they're seeing that and they're finding retention to be difficult because they don't have healthcare. So you'll find them losing people to, and I'm all about small business. You'll find them losing people to larger giant chains, for example, that might have commercial healthcare or taking on three jobs with their spouse or partner taking on two or three jobs just so that one of them can somehow get them healthcare insurance.
We're also tied to that job because, you know, maybe Cynthia, perhaps you have some stories or anecdotes to share. You know, what if you have to keep the job for the insurance and you could be miserable?
That's very true. And I'd have to say that in some of the jobs I've had, that has been mainly the case that I stayed. It was mainly for healthcare. Dental care, eye care. That was the main reason I stayed in the job. It was because I was enjoying myself. And I think a lot of people do that. They stick with a job that they might not really enjoy, but they need that health insurance. They need that security. And so they stay.
Yeah. You know, I've encountered that personally too, on a personal level. You know, I know school bus drivers that are well-educated people. Well, why are you driving a bus? Because I need healthcare insurance. I talk to the people at the grocery store all the time. You know, very well-educated people. Why are you here? For the health insurance. It's so common. People are essentially working for healthcare just to be able to cover themselves and their family.
Mm-hmm. Or to help United Healthcare make 30, what was that again? $30 billion? Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, the whole market right now, according to the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis in 2023, it's a $4 trillion. Okay, you were talking billions of dollars. We're talking $1 trillion market. Think about that for a second. And health sharing is unknown. And there's an opportunity for us as Americans to literally put money back in our pockets, for small businesses to put that money back into their pockets, into their businesses, into their families, with coverage that works better and feels better than insurance, frankly.
One of the things we're going to keep plodding you with a lot of questions. I do remember, I didn't bring my visual guides with me, but I remember when I first signed up for I won't name them, but it might have a certain color in their name, that I remember getting their policy in the ACA, and it was a relief to get something, you know, just something. when I was going through some tough times. But I remember that book that I got with it, like what's covered, what isn't. I think it was thicker than the yellow pages of all the exceptions to the rule.
Right. And that's like, it's one of a department store I go to, you know, you go in there because you've got these 25% off and 50% off coupons, and you go in and everything I want to buy, of course, is excluded. Right. It's the same. It's a similar type of thing. I just bumped into a gentleman the other day who, oh, I've got XYZ insurance, and realized he had broke his ankle, had to go to the ER, and it was a $500 copay. And
Wowzers.
He had no idea. You're not going to encounter that with health sharing, at least with the health sharing model that I'm working with. You know, so we directly negotiate to providers, and you're not going to find those surprise type of charges. So, you know, that's another advantage there as well.
Can you go into more detail, like what a plan would be, say, for a small business owner with six employees might look like?
So the way the model, I can't give you a number because it depends on the age. So let me take it to a family, which a quote would look similar to that of a small business. I'll back up. A 25-year-old, I can cover for about $76 a month. So let's say a restaurant owner has five employees at $75 a month. Normally, the individual ends up paying that, but good business owners that can afford it will end up picking up the tab, so to speak. And we do have group plans available, senior, individual, and family. So the group I can't quote you to because that's very customized based on the age and the population of the restaurant. What I can, or the business. What I can tell you is we have a client in the aerospace industry who has about 160 employees and was paying about more than 7,000. We're saving them $7,000 a month. We're saving them $84,000 a year. And that's only with nine of his 160 employees rolling over to Impact because he just introduced it. If the majority of those people go over from one of the big XYZ companies, we're talking this business owner savings of up to $750,000 in a year. That's how significant it is. So I know you asked for a group quote. It's a little difficult for me to give you one. The company I work with, we can provide direct quoting, but it's just a little complicated. I don't want to throw a number out. I can tell you, me as someone in my 50s, it's 288, and somebody in their 20s, it's going to be about 75, and that's individual. Now, with the family or small business groups, medium business groups, deductibles are per family. So it's not $2,500 for each person in the family, which I encountered when I was on commercial insurance. And it was very hard to meet these high deductibles for each member of the family, unless you fall and hurt yourself during COVID like I did. Then it was easy after a couple of foot surgeries. But so that's another advantage. Groups are available, and the cost savings that I just shared with you are even more significant if an employer gets on with a group discount.
Before we get into the next segment, we wanted to let you know you're listening to Getting Down to Business with Mark Mondo on WVLP 103.1 FM, a community radio station out of Valparaiso, Indiana. Thanks for listening, and let's continue.
All right, we're back from break. And Michelle, you can't leave yet. We got more questions for you.
Shoot.
All right. So
throw them out.
So here we go. We've been institutionalized that insurance companies have to be for profit. We moan about the billions, but I don't have choices in an oligopoly. You know, this is an oligopoly market with insurance, at least up till now. With this health sharing, could be an option. And since you mentioned it was a nonprofit, how can an insurance company be a nonprofit yet provide service? At what expense? Who gets cut out?
Well, I'll answer your question real short because it's not an insurance company. It's a health sharing company. All right, well,
there, see, I got to be educated.
Yeah, so, and I mean that by it's health sharing.
Right.
So as I said, it acts like insurance. It's healthcare coverage. I'll call it that. But I'm not going to associate health sharing with health insurance because it is different. So and back to the nonprofit question, we don't have offices. We don't run radio ads, no offense. We don't pay for newspaper ads or print ads. We don't have shareholders. We are member owned. So essentially each member of a health sharing organization, especially with the company that I'm partnered with, gets to track every dollar of theirs and where it's going. And we pride ourselves in that transparency because I can't say that it exists in every health share, very good health sharing partners out there. I can't say that it exists in every health sharing organization. So I really personally, on a personal level, liked to be able to see where my money was going. And, you know, some people don't care and some people want to check every day and every dollar. So that's the beauty. That's the beauty of that.
Okay. So another dilemma we faced, and I'm going to probably get corrected here on how I say these things, and that's okay. It's part of education, Michelle, is you've got the stuff that I got stuck with fairly hard when I was switching insurance providers over a couple of years. There's a cardiologist that I will always go to for my annual checkup, and I had it with one insurance company. Then when I switched insurance companies, it went from in-network to out-of-network, and I wanted to keep my doctor. I paid the out-of-network, so I know that is probably a very common issue in commercial and health insurance. Like, well, unless they're in the group, you got to pay up even more. Even though you pay a premium, you still got to pay more on top of that. So can you address how health sharing addresses that?
Yeah. You know, Mark, wouldn't it be great if there were no network?
Just one. Yeah. Like an NHS. Well,
all right. I got news for you. With health sharing, with our company, there is no network. This health sharing coverage is accepted everywhere. And this is part of, you asked for barriers earlier. This is one of the barriers that I encounter. Well, how can that be? And what we're finding is physicians love it. In fact, we have physicians coming over to do as I'm doing and represent the product to patients because they're getting paid fairly, rapidly. They're not getting rejected. There's this whole movement called medical freedom, which we can talk about in a little bit, but it allows them to practice medicine in the way that they feel is best for the patient without the constraints or handcuffs that they're currently experiencing with the current system. So you take your card just like you would take your XYZ insurance card to any physician or immediate care. They run it and you get processed. Now, because health sharing's new, they might have not seen a health sharing card or seen it, but all they have to do is simply run it through their EMR or call an 800 number. Oh, this sounds great. And this is where we're finding that physicians, chiropractors, et cetera, are wanting to come over because they're in medicine and they don't know about this. And they're like, holy cow, do you mean I can actually treat patients and not have to spend 50% of my time during the day dealing with pre-authorizations and insurance companies? And wow. And so there's this whole group of physicians coming over doing just that. I have pharmacists on the team that I work on that came over from one of the two biggies from corporate, who's a doctor of pharmacy, who also now is trying to share health sharing like I'm doing, because he's passionate about this and he works in a poorer community, a little more disadvantaged socioeconomically community. And he's like, I can help these people. These people are running around out there with no coverage. For a certain population, you know, I mentioned earlier that we cover here people that are here legally, right? You don't need a social, you need an I-10. There are so many people that come over, if something happens, something catastrophic, a severe illness or injury, it destroys them. I know a gentleman I used to work with when I had one of my consulting contracts, who had come over from Mexico without insurance and got very, very sick with very, very severe, nearly died. Metabolic conditions involving several organ systems, had no insurance, over $250,000 plus in medical bills he was still left responsible for because he didn't have insurance. He lost his home, he lost his house, or his car. He had to dump out his savings and is now working pretty much minimum wage just trying to stay afloat. Where this gentleman came over for the American dream and was doing really, really well in the food service industry. And it's just devastating. So I circle back to this pharmacist who wants to help these type of people access affordable healthcare and help them. And, you know, those are just a couple examples of the impact that this can have and the need that there is for certain groups of people. You know, 25, 20, when you turn 26, you either lose your parents' insurance. Then what do you do? Most of them are just venturing into careers or, you know, still trying to figure out what they're going to do. So they'll go uninsured. That puts them at risk. When, you know, I just talked to a 26-year-old gym owner, he's turning 26, he's losing his insurance. And he's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I've been looking at, he's married already, me and my wife, you know, we're looking at these crazy plans for the two of us that are like $600 and we're young. So he's an example of somebody that I can help for half of that price. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but
I think it all relates.
There is no network. There's no network. And I guess that was a long-winded answer to no network. And people are like, how can there be no network? The problem is, you guys, is that if you have traditional insurance and let's say you pass out or, you know, something happens, you're brought to the nearest hospital. If that hospital is not in your network, guess what? You're in a lot of trouble financially. Because
you have to be so careful. Yes, you have to be so careful about that. When I had some minor foot surgery years ago, not only did I have to make sure that the location of where I was having the surgery was in network, and not only my doctor was in network, but the anesthesiologist was in my network. The nurses that were going to work there were in my network. Anybody to do with the surgery, I had to get confirmation and over and over again to make sure that everybody servicing me in that surgery was in network. And it took a lot of time. And it's very frustrating because sometimes you'll have it all set, you'll go there, and that anesthesiologist, you know, can't do it. So they bring in somebody else. Don't tell you, and then you find out they're out of network.
Or it's a rookie.
Yep.
It's their first one.
And ouch, right?
Yeah.
And you had the capacity to be involved in your decision-making process, but some people that go to the ER, in fact, many of them that go to the ER, you know, let's put it this way. You don't go to the emergency room if it's not an emergency. You go to the ER and you go to the closest one and you worry about the rest later. There are people that may not get covered at all, that may end up responsible for the whole bill. They might treat you in the ER and then kick you out to another hospital that is in network, but you're still responsible for that ER portion of your bill. Your copay is very likely high for that ER. And if they do pay it, it's usually at a much, much lower percentage than someone in network. I love not having to go to log into my website and my former website with my former insurer and have to pick and choose and figure out which doctor. Oh, no, they're not in network. They are, but they're in network, but they're only an affiliate to the network. So they're not a preferred provider. And it was just such a hassle because it seemed like the doctors I wanted to use, this is my luck, right? Like my favorite product in the grocery store comes off the shelf. My favorite doctors would, I'd get a letter, we're dropping XYZ yep. plan. And I found myself, you know, it happened constantly between doctors and specialists. So, yeah. you know, I'm keep reiterating here, there's no network. No network.
To me is a very great thing to hear because it's gotten from the time I had my first policy after leaving my parents' plan, which is a general HMO, and I was in my mid-20s, didn't have any health issues. I was like, yeah, I'll take the cheapest plan. You know, fortunately, I didn't have any major catastrophic incidences at all. But as I got older and the insurance coverage plans got more complicated, you had to become more and more your own advocate, let alone administrator, to the point where now you pretty much have to do it all. And if you don't take the time to prep and do that, you really will pay through the nose. So,
yeah.
Well, it's absolutely true. What we're doing now is you got this really cool idea. I hope it will continue to take the other $1 trillion away from the people like in the C-suite and the stockholders and the investors class and bring it to those who deserve it and those who need it and those who should be, you know, part of the supply chain. Since you aren't doing advertising and you're not doing Super Bowl ads or NCAA ads, mm-hmm. how are you going to, you know, this is back to a theme of our show. What are your tactics to promote the company, you know, to promote your business? Because this is your business that you're, mm-hmm. you know, you're not doing all the insurance, but you're, you know, you're a representative for the company. How are you mm-hmm. going to promote yourself?
Well, certainly. And thank you again for allowing me. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll start with that. And then we're going to build up to how are you doing it? And then we'll talk about how you're going to advise others. So if you want to also share what works for you and how you talk to somebody else just getting started.
Certainly. And thank you again for allowing me to be here because this is part of it, right? You're a nonprofit. I'm partnered with a nonprofit healthcare organization. So this is just part of it. And I'm not even out here selling my company. I'm just here educating. I feel that I'm on a crusade to disrupt this broken industry. And community awareness and individual awareness. It was mentioned earlier that part of my business with small business advocacy is networking. Networking is huge. And healthcare just organically comes up no matter what you're trying to sell, whether you're trying to sell a CRM to somebody or what, healthcare very, very often comes up. So I use networking a lot as an opportunity to grow my business and educate people about health sharing. So I'm also building a team of people to do. I wish there were 100 of me right now because I can only get so far with just Michelle, with just me.
Well, that'll be another. You have to listen to other podcasts of ours. We'll talk about scaling later.
Yes. Absolutely. This thing is going to scale up. So if you think of what I didn't touch upon was the amazing, you work in the IT space, right, yep. Mark? So the technology component with my marketing partner in health sharing is state of the art. It's industry leading. So they've married technology with healthcare, much like, I don't know if I said this earlier, but much like Uber did to the taxi industry or Amazon did to the retail space industry. You know, Mark Cuban could have got Uber for $250,000, right? All Uber was doing was offering people a ride sharing service. So I'm doing health sharing. Uber was a ride sharing, right?
Yep. They
but
started with
Cuban's
Uber
like,
Black.
Who the heck? Yeah. Cuban Mark's like, who's going to get into a car with a stranger? Are you crazy? So, now Uber's worth $2.3 billion. So this same mentality applies to those industries and what Netflix did to Blockbuster, and there's story after story. So I think it's really important to highlight the advantage that and what appealed to me about this company is they use people like me to directly talk about it, and the technology component that was developed assures that's the speed, the ease of use, and the transparency that the company prides itself so well on.
Sweet. So you got some good IT in there, which I can always admire. And you got your own networking skills. Is there anybody and we've seen this as a recurring theme, and Cynthia, please chime in. When we see people, we think it's all the Horatio Alger story. I did it all by myself. I think that's a bunch of,
malarkey.
Malarkey. I was going to say another word, but yeah. I probably have to bleep myself out several times.
Yeah.
So what's your support system? What do you think that soft skill, who's helping you along the way?
Yeah, well, I talked about the how big this $4 trillion pie is, right? And right. What am I doing to get my fair share and to get people their fair share of the pie, even if it's savings or earnings? Obviously, I do make money on this, full transparency, right? I do a lot for free, but I'm representing healthcare, but I'm okay with it because at the end of the day, and I said this at a speaking engagement a couple of weeks ago, I get paid to help people save money. How cool is that? It took me half a century to land in a place, and I truly passionately mean this, where I feel really, really good about what I'm doing. And, you know, how am I going to do this? I can't do it alone. It takes a village. One of my favorite quotes is from Helen Keller, and it's, alone we can do so little, together we can do so much. So I am being blessed and fortunate enough to surround myself with people that, like me, are extremely passionate about this product. Once they understand it, they want to do what I'm doing. So this links back to, you know, everything's interconnected in a way. I started out by saying I'm a connector. It's part of my business strategy. But I'm connecting webs of people, I'm networking networks of people. And a lot of people want to get involved in this. So I'm just building a team for myself and for my marketing partner. And that, you know, I think that comes from the years in corporate America in training and development, where I've learned how to do that. It's word of mouth. You know, that's what they're doing. That's how this is going to work. Can you imagine what we've discussed today being in a 30-second TV radio spot? You'd be like, click, next, because you wouldn't understand it. That's why you need people like me connecting others, connecting with patients or people that need health coverage, and business-minded people or entrepreneurial-minded people that want to share the sharings. I keep saying that, but share the
story. You want to share story. I think people really are engaged with story still. Even if it comes down to a 30-second TikTok, it's a story.
Right. So social media is a part of it. I do a little bit of social media, but I'm finding just if I get 30 seconds to talk about this in front of a group of 30 people, I've got at least 10 lined up to speak to me afterwards. Like, what was that you just talked about? Nice. Healthcare? I hate mine.
Right.
I ask for a show of hands before I even start a talk. Who here is happy with their current healthcare situation? And like I heard you say earlier, Mark, was boo, you know.
Oh, I'm sure I've done that plenty of times. Yeah.
I have yet to hear, yeah, you know, no one's happy. I really, really, truly passionately want to help people and help and be a disruptor in this system. I see it. I'm one person. I can do my part and I can bring people on board to this team who are as passionate about it as I am. And that's what I'm here to do.
Cool. So we're getting close to the end of the show here. So what I need to do is I say this every time, but it rings true. I have to thank Cynthia for keeping us on the level and on time.
I do my best.
So what I need to also do is thank Michelle for coming on the show. And what I can't do is, you know, if someone had to find Michelle, are you reachable somewhere?
Yes, I am. You can actually go and find me on my personal individual business owner website at www.mmsolutions.acnibo.com. That's www.mmsolutions.acnibo.com.
And of course, again, we'd like to thank Michelle for joining us today.
It was very interesting and very helpful to hear about the HealthShare plan.
And Mark, Cynthia, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show today, to help spread the word and allowing you to be here today, and for all your time and the research you've done. And hey, if we've helped a few people out there, then we've done our job. Very much appreciate you both. Thank you.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
All right. Well, if you missed some of the show today, you can listen to the replay on Thursday at 1 p.m. Central Time on WVLP 103.1 FM or the live stream at WVLP.org. And we store the past shows on Mark's website. Hey, that's my website at mondocrm.com/podcast. Or you can listen to the podcast on your favorite app at any time. We're listed in all the major podcast applications. Yes, I finally fixed the Apple iTunes part yesterday. So just search for me, Mark Mondo, and the show will come up, and you can subscribe to the show for the latest updates on your app. And by the way, the show is now on YouTube. Just search for Mondo CRM or Getting Down to Business with Mark Mondo, and the episodes will come up on the YouTube feed. So thank you very much for spending time with us today, and we look forward to you joining us again next week.